Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We're glad to be joined by Michael Bumpus. Michael Bumpus, how are you? Hold on, let me start over. Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We are thrilled to be joined by Michael Bumpus, as we are every Friday. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. We've been trying to navigate through at least the early part of this offseason for the Seahawks. You know, the more I think about it, the more I think if the Seahawks were healthy, they're pretty darn close to being able to make the Super Bowl. That said, you're probably not going to be healthy at the end of every single year, no matter what team you are. We know that they need to add pass rush. What's the best way to do that, do you think?
One, you got to make sure you sign Clowney. Make sure he's good to go. Lock him in for a long-term deal if you can. Two, you have to rely on the development of some of these younger guys, the Rasheem Greens, the Quinn Jeffersons, see who signs there. And then just going out and drafting one. I know last year they drafted LJ, didn't really pan out, but he kind of started off rough with getting hurt, I believe, like his first or second practice in camp. So seeing the way he develops and then going out and getting somebody. I mean, you look at the 2020 free agent list, there's a bunch of guys out there. And just making a move. They got to spend money. I think I heard you say earlier this week, Jake, they have to spend money. Forget this bargain stuff. Forget the Goodwill thrift shop type stuff. Go to Nordstrom's and buy you a nice defensive lineman.
Well, I do like that strategy, my friend. I do concur with you. Now, you said, and this was a discussion that we had yesterday on our show, but one of the first things you said was go get Clowney. Why? Why are you getting a guy that only got three sacks? You know, we talk about pressure rates. What in the heck does that even mean to this group? And that, honestly, the defensive line, the defense as a whole, wasn't very good and was a defense that he was a part of. Why is he worth the money that he is going to be commanding? And why is he the number one priority in your mind in the free agent market?
I think he's number one because without Clowney, imagine what this defensive line would have looked like. He didn't get a lot of sacks, but he caused a lot of pressure. And every play that he did make was huge. You know, he doesn't make little plays. It's like all or nothing with this guy. And he develops a tempo on that line. He has that quick twitch. He can get off the line, put pressure on the quarterback, and he's a leader. And then you think about just his attributes. You know, I don't think we saw the best of Clowney this year. I think he was getting acclimated. He fought through a couple of, he was dinged up a little bit here and there. So we didn't get the best Clowney that we can get. I think a healthy Clowney, a Clowney who is secure, know he's going to be here for a while. Something changes with your mental or whatnot, but you just can't let a guy like that go. He's your best defensive lineman, the best defensive lineman you got, and one of the best in the NFL if you don't look at the stats. You got to be a real student of the game to understand what Clowney does. He's not going to sack the quarterback a bunch, but he collapsed the pocket. You can drop him out of zone if you want to. The Hawks didn't really do that much with him, but he's super versatile, and I don't think you find a guy with the attributes that Clowney has. And he was the best guy on your defensive line, which wasn't very good this year.
Brady Henderson was on with Danny and Gallant yesterday. We talked about that interview, and he said he's not entirely convinced Clowney re-signs with Seattle. In fact, he thinks maybe Clowney doesn't. What happens if he doesn't? Like, what's the state of this defense, and what do you do if you're John Schneider?
If Clowney doesn't sign, the state of the defense is not very good.
not great.
It's not very good. He was probably the second best guy on that defense. You got Bobby Wagner, who had a great year. KJ had a career year for him.
He had a good year.
But Clowney's a guy. If you don't sign Clowney, the plus is you got a bunch of money to work with. So now you can really go out there and be aggressive when it comes to free agency. Maybe you get a couple D linemen instead of one marquee name. Maybe you go out and find yourself a really good tight end. We know how the Hawks have struggled at that position over the years due to injury. It changes the complexion of the free agency for these guys. The only plus I feel coming from Clowney is that you got more money to go out and go shopping.
If Clowney's not going to give you big sack numbers, though, why pay big money? Why not go that route where you pay maybe more than one guy? You pay one guy on one side, one guy on the other to ramp up that sack number.
You know, with Clowney, it's like it's all based off of potential. You know, you go off of his resume, and that's what a lot of people do in the NFL. It's like, what have you done throughout your career? You know, you're not going to pay a guy who hasn't done much, who is full of potential but hasn't really shown it. You've seen what Clowney can do. But it does make sense. If Clowney doesn't leave, it's not the end of the world. You can still go out and get a couple of guys. But when you have a guy with his size, with his speed, his length, and when the big playability, there's not too many DNs grabbing the ball out the air and running it back 25 yards for a touchdown or scooping and scoring. It's the big playability that kind of makes him a really sexy pick. If he doesn't sign, which is a possibility, you know, someone's gonna challenge the Seahawks when it comes to money. Someone's gonna challenge him. And if he decides to go that way, so be it. Now you can get a couple more guys.
Bump, we obviously are recapping the Super Bowl this week and reflecting on it and talking about it. And one of the big conversations, and we came in on Monday, and Tom Wassel is sitting here saying this was Patrick Mahomes' coronation in terms of being the new face of the league in the NFL. And obviously a lot of praise is going to Patrick Mahomes. We had Bill Barnwell on. Stacey and I had the chance to talk to him. And he came out and said that he believes that Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes, talent-wise, Russell can do everything that Patrick Mahomes can and essentially put those two guys up on a pedestal as here are these two players, these two quarterbacks in the league, and there's everybody else. With that being said, do you think that the Seahawks need to be making a different approach offensively, personnel-wise, to, you know, fit themselves to be more, take advantage of him like Patrick Mahomes does with the Kansas City, or the Kansas City Chiefs do with Patrick Mahomes? Or do you think that they need to, you know, stick to the status quo and just solely focus on getting their defense better?
Personnel-wise, I think they're okay. Granted, Disley comes back healthy. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you sign a Greg Olsen. That tight end spot needs to be secure. I think at the receiver spot, you got DK who's good to go. You got Lockett who's good to go. And maybe bring in a third receiver. Who knows how David Moore is going to develop. John Ursua is a name that's been thrown out there a little bit. They could add a couple pieces. And then that offensive line, they're getting old. Britt's coming off a knee surgery. Upati is banged up. Who knows if Ifedi's going to be back. So there's a couple things they need to do on the offense personnel-wise. I think it's more philosophical. It's the philosophy. What exactly are they doing on offense is kind of what leaves me scratching my head when you have a guy like Russell Wilson who can do some of the things that Mahomes can do. I hope seeing Mahomes this year, the past couple of years, the way that he's developed in his big playability kind of encourages the Hawks, like, hey, we got one too. You know, we have one of those. Let's open it up and let him go. So offensively, I don't want to say get away from the run. The older I get, the more I love when teams run the football because it's safe, it's secure, you know. My younger days, I'd say throw that thing 70 times. But you can't get away from the run, but you can spread things open a little bit. I saw Russ perform his best, one, under pressure late in the game, and when 2x2 sets, 3x1 sets, even empty sets. He's capable of doing it. He's one of the most responsible people I know off the field and on the field. Off the field, never worry about him getting in trouble. On the field, he takes care of the football, and he's a winner. So if he's proven that he can take care of the football and lead your team in multiple ways, why not just open up that playbook? But it comes down to Shoddy. He calls the plays. It's his philosophy, and Pete Carroll hired him for a reason because he agreed with his offensive approach. So I think it really comes down to how much are those guys going to be able to, I wouldn't say develop because Pete's 68. He's not developing anymore. But
he's done.
Know, yeah, he's done. But just expand the playbook a little bit. Like an Andy Reid, man. I see Andy Reid. If Andy Reid can do it, why not Pete Carroll?
Well, it's interesting because you get to this point of, you know, you talk about expanding the passing game, but also you understand and recognize that this running game has been pretty good. It's been really good under Brian Schottenheimer. They ranked number one in 2018. They ranked number four, and you've got a special running back in Chris Carson. So you can't abandon it completely, but there's evolution. And the game that I go back to that I think can best correlate all of this is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. Is they were out, they came out aggressive. They played aggressively in the passing game, and yet Chris Carson was still able to accomplish a big running game. He's still able to get over 100 yards on the ground versus a tremendous running game or a run defense. And I think that sometimes you can allow that pass to set up the run or still be effective in the run game while you're opening things up. So I guess it's all our fear is don't lose that physical presence if you open the passing game up like the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's that kind of back and forth that I feel from everybody. It's like, I want to pass, but I also don't want to let go of this run game as well. Can you get the best of both?
Yeah, I think you can. I think it's week by week, down by down, situation by situation. You know, I think the knock over the past few years is that the Hawks have just been stubborn with the run. It's not working. We're still going to get at it. We're still going to get at it. Whereas now they have reason to believe that if the run's not working, they can open it up and throw the ball around. So I think it's more about adjusting to the situation. You have to be stubborn at some point because it is what it is. You are who you are. But don't be afraid to let Russell just, man, throw that thing all across the field, and then eventually that'll open up the run. So it's about versatility, man. The more you can do and the more you can recognize what's going on, the faster you can make adjustments, I think that's going to help take the Seahawks offense to the next level.
Bill Barnwell was not optimistic that they'd change. I think it was because he's like, well, I've been watching this offense for 7-8 years now with Russell Wilson under center, and it feels like a lot of the same. But do you have more optimism that they could adapt a little bit and expand for Russell Wilson, or are you kind of in the same boat of, I don't know that they will, but they need to?
I'm kind of skeptical as well. I mean, you have Schottenheimer. It's his offense, pretty much. It is what it is. This is what he likes to do. And then you have a head coach who's 68 years old. I don't know too many 68-year-old people who are changing. You know, my grandmother's 70-something years old. She ain't changing.
My dad did recently start having frozen yogurt instead of ice cream.
There we go. Well, hopefully Pete Carroll and Schottenheimer will start eating frozen yogurt instead of ice cream.
When it's healthier choices. You know what I mean? Like, you want to be here for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see them changing much. Especially when you're in a position like a head coach or offense coordinator where you are publicly criticized. It's a high-pressure job. You're going to live and die by what you believe in. You're not going to change yourself to satisfy everyone else. They've gotten to this point being who they are, so I would imagine it's difficult to change philosophy or who you are offensively.
You know what, though? Part of his philosophy is to look at every player he has, identify unique skill sets, and let them go with that. If he looks at Russell Wilson and he says, look, Russell Wilson can do X, Y, and Z, why would I hold him back from doing Z? You know what I mean? Why not turn him loose a little bit as he's improving?
Yeah, but maybe turning him loose in his mind looks different than turning him loose in our minds.
True.
In our minds, turning him loose is, you know, letting him just throw the rock. In his mind, maybe it's a little more play action or taking more shots down the field. You know, it's perspective, man. You know, it's all about what lens you're looking through. And we don't know what lens he's looking through. He probably came away from the season like, man, we really let Russell do his thing this year. You know, and he hears the outside criticism. Yeah. He's like, what are they talking about? You look at the numbers. And Russell did throw the ball a little bit more than he typically does. It is what it is. I think it's just the way that the offense looked. It doesn't resemble some of the high-powered offenses that we're seeing today in the NFL.
Pete Carroll was me leaving the dance floor like, I killed it. That was amazing. And then later people come up to you and they're like, you are so funny.
You are so brave.
You are so funny. Oh, my gosh.
Did you
do that on purpose?
That's awesome. Mike, one last thing. There are people here with the, you know, in terms of free agency and their outlook, you know, Mike Salk, Jim Moore, and a couple different people. And they're saying, hey, put all of your assets on the defensive side of the ball. Stacey was in this camp as well at one point, and I think she's changed a little bit over time. This is something that, do you believe that they have to go all in on defense, spend all of their assets on the defensive side of the ball, or do you think that it's more, it needs to gear towards the offense? Because I'm genuinely curious about what your thought process is on that.
I wouldn't go all in on either side of the ball. I think that if you're going to split the money up, you got $60 million, I think it goes 75-25 defense. Offensively, they've shown that they can be successful. Where they've struggled is on the defensive side of the ball, you know. And offensively, I think just the main thing right now is getting healthy offensive linemen, seeing how Chris Carson and Rashad Penny heal, and then that tight end spot, because it's going to be tough for Will Dissly, man. Love the dude. Unfortunate he's gotten hurt, but once you start getting hurt, it kind of keeps rolling. You know, it is what it is. That's how the body works. But I think the offense is good enough to win a Super Bowl. I don't think the defense is good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Michael Bumbus joins us every single Friday. Thanks for dropping by.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, right. Bump. Someone texting in wants to know if my my dad still chooses the same flavor of frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
That he did ice cream. He does.
He does. What flavor is it?
Like any caramel.
Any caramel? That's
just a fun fact for you guys.
Yeah, that's not a bad flavor.
Let's get to NFL headlines. All right. Patrick Mahomes, even though he's not scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent until 2022, could be seeing a new deal. Here's Tom Pelissero on the timing of that.
But everyone involved also has a vested interest in being mindful of how this contract impacts the rest of the Chiefs roster. They've got some other decisions coming up here in the next month or so. Can they re-sign defensive tackle Chris Jones? Can they retain wide receiver Sammy Watkins? You also could have a new collective bargaining agreement soon that potentially would impact the marketplace. Mahomes obviously is the priority in the big picture for the Chiefs, but the most likely timetable is going to be sometime after the draft to get this deal done with Mahomes.
Now, Mahomes is an MVP winner and Super Bowl MVP winner. His current contract that he signed after being drafted is 4 years, $16 million. He made $4.1 million this year. Quarterbacks making more than that include Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tyrod Taylor, Daniel Jones, Teddy Bridgewater, Mitch Trubisky, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. The list goes on. The list goes on and on.
Patrick Mahomes is going to get paid.
Pretty soon.
He is going to. When we talk about this contract negotiations with Russell Wilson, and oh my gosh, everybody was freaking out that he wanted to get the respects of being the number one guy and having it be his turn, and he ended up getting that $35 million contract. This is going to pale in comparison to what Patrick Mahomes is going to do. He is going to totally reset the market. He is not going to beat Russell Wilson. He's going to reset it. And I guarantee you, Dak Prescott and all these other quarterbacks and Russell Wilson, and everybody's paying attention to this, because if you look at it from that standpoint, Patrick Mahomes is going to be, their contracts are going to get that much bigger the next time around that their deals are done, just because of this contract that's coming up with Mahomes.
And that is an important thing to note, too, because originally when you and Howdy were talking about it, I started thinking, well, no way is, I don't even know, Dak Prescott or another quarterback, Kyler Murray down the road, and who knows what his career could be. Maybe he could be great, but no way at this point in their careers can I see them commanding more money than Mahomes is getting. But then you rightfully pointed out, like you just did, that, well, it's not about commanding more than what Mahomes is getting. It's going to be hard for almost any quarterback in the league to come in and say, well, wait a minute, Patrick Mahomes is getting $40 million. I think I can get 41. But, you know, if you look at Russell Wilson as setting the tone for guys like Jared Goff, who has since gotten an extension, and Carson Wentz, neither got as much as Russell Wilson did, but he set the tone for their contracts.
Correct. They got somewhere around 31, 32,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So all of a sudden, if you're Dak Prescott, you're eyeing this. Even the franchise tag is going to go up if this
right.
is the case.
And so the original offer, based off the highest contract in the league, Dak Prescott reportedly, his offer was $33 million. By the Cowboys, and he turned that down. Now, if he waits and waits and waits, like to wait after Patrick Mahomes, now if Mahomes gets $40 million, now Dak Prescott has the ability to get somewhere probably around $37, $38 million because Mahomes reset that market.
Meanwhile, the Cowboys say Dak contract talks are, quote, fixing to heat up, which is the most Texas description of any kind of timing of anything in the world.
That's exactly why I put that on there.
I love it.
Fixing to heat up.
Fixing to heat up. 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan, on the other hand, in this sound right here, says he has no regrets over first half timeout management.
No, absolutely not. I think that was one of the reasons we were up 10 points going into the fourth quarter. Absolutely wanted to call a timeout at that time because we were expecting to be backed up and inside the 10, just like probably should have been at the 1 if they didn't mess that play up. So, as confident as what we did in that situation as anything we've done all year, and I mean that strongly. That's something you work at all for 2 weeks studying that team, what they're capable of doing. You're not going to give the ball back to them no matter what in that situation. The way he did that 3rd and 15 at the end of the game is how he does a 2-minute drive. And felt extremely good with how we went. Not using the timeout there was a no-brainer. But then trying to work the clock. If we would have got an explosive run on the first one, then it would have been a whole different deal. But we got a 2.5-yard run. And so the whole goal was to not let them call a timeout there.
I get that people nitpick after a Super Bowl. You nitpick the Super Bowl loser. But I feel like second half management should kind of carry more weight than first half timeout management. And didn't they have all three timeouts with that kind of under 2 minutes?
It is
right?
It
they
is
had
true,
at least a couple.
And if you're going into that situation and settling for a field goal, which they had the opportunity to do at the end with George Kittle, that's one thing. But I think it's frustrating when you have that much time left, you have those timeouts available for you, and you have the opportunity to go score. If you have Russell Wilson as your quarterback, you're trying to go score. But because they had Jimmy Garoppolo and the strength of their team was running the football, and they were nervous about the Chiefs having three timeouts of their own, and their quick strike ability, I'm fine with that. I understand that philosophy and him doubling down on it. I actually really respect it. the flip side of it is I actually heard this from Danny O'Neill on Danny and Gallant this morning. I think he makes a great point is if he feels that way and he thinks that the run game is the right thing to do with that time and to milk the clock and not give Patrick Mahomes another chance, then his fourth quarter management, Stacey, that you're talking about, is which is much more reasonable to argue with. If he felt that way, then he should be trying to milk the clock and run the ball and do what they are that got them there the whole way instead of trying to throw the ball with Jimmy Garoppolo in the fourth quarter. So you're talking about limiting the opportunities for Mahomes. That was an opportunity in the fourth quarter, how you managed it and how you called the game. You could have milked it and tried to keep the ball away from them there as well.
Shanahan, I'm easily swayed. I'm a man of weak principle, apparently. He totally swayed me on this. What do the 49ers want to do? They want to run the ball. How long is it going to take them to go 80 yards? Like 5, 6, 7 minutes?
Right.
The 49ers? Chiefs, yeah.
They want to throw the ball right over your head. They're going to go down the field and score in 15 seconds.
And I understand that. So explain to me, Kyle, if you're easily swayed, how can you justify the play calling that he had in the fourth quarter?
Well, the stupid answer is two separate situations. One's at the end of half with the whole rest of the game to go, and the other is just like, okay, he's been in this situation.
It's not a stupid answer. It's your immediate kind of answer. It was my immediate answer. It was like, well, wait a minute.
And it's probably Shanahan's immediate answer that he's trying to go win the game and take the game away from the Chiefs. And look, I've said this before. He called wide open plays. Jimmy G did not complete them. I don't blame him for this. But I'm saying he's contradicting his philosophy and his approach. If you want to suck the air out of the ball and limit the chances for Patrick Mahomes to go and score at the end of the half, then you probably should have leaned on that philosophy
stick
with
to your
six,
guns.
6 minutes left
Kyle.
To go in the game and limit the
Kyle.
Opportunities for Patrick Mahomes. That's probably what he should have done.
What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
XFL opening weekend, Saturday.
Let's go!
The Seattle Dragons are taking on the DC Defenders, led by quarterback Cardale Jones. 11 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow on ABC.
That will be fun to watch. I'm really looking forward to this team. And did we talked about before prepping the show that somehow Vegas has odds on what teams are going to win? Like, how do they know this?
Well, there's already Vegas odds makers.
Who is studying these practices? They haven't played.
Lifelong Seattle Dragons
fans. How do they know?
Well, the thing that you look at, they're trying to look at, I think, the strength of the team. So they look at, the players that the
no
teams have already acquired.
No respect for Brandon Silvers?
That's
is that
exactly
the issue?
Exactly what it
the
is.
The star players aren't getting the respect they deserve from the Seattle Dragons. So the Seattle Dragons, you said they were dead last.
They had the lowest, in terms of predicted wins this season, Vegas gave them the lowest predicted win total.
Great. And chip on week, your shoulder mentality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Back them into a corner. That's when we're at our best.
That's right.
And then this week against the Defenders, they were like double-digit dogs.
Saturday, they're going to come out breathing fire. Breathing fire. That's their hashtag.
Oh, Kyle, gosh. How can the Seahawks get back to a Super Bowl in 2020? We've outlined our blueprint, and we'll tell you about it next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
We have an off-season blueprint. It's a good one. A really good one. We're going to have an ongoing series on Tom, Jake, and Stacey examining the Seahawks off-season. I'm going to say in four different phases. There's going to be number one, Seahawks free agents. Number two, NFL free agents. All of those will obviously happen before March 18th, which is the official start of NFL free agency. Then we're going to look at some Seahawks draft prospects and going to look at the Seahawks picks that they actually make. This will take us right into Seahawks rookie camp. We've got a lot of great stuff for you guys. We're going to have on-air components every day during these series at 2 p.m. Again, Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 2 p.m. That starts Monday with our first of the Seahawks free agent profiles. We're also going to have digital assets. You can check out videos of these.
You're getting me hyped, Stacey. You're getting me hyped.
Let's go.
I can't wait for Monday when we get
awesome.
These things started.
Now, the first thing that we needed to do was look at the priorities we have to answer a question. The question we're answering all offseason is, how do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020? How did they get back this year? And so to get that started, we looked at our priorities, what we think the Seahawks need to do to get back to the Super Bowl, so that when we look at these offseason acquisitions or free agent targets or draft picks, do they add to these priorities? How do they help the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl? Every single decision that they make should be able to answer the question, will this help the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl? And we're going to walk you guys through that as we go along and look at it. So let's go through our priorities. Number one, very obvious. You all know what it is. We all agreed to it already. Pass rush.
Yeah, pass rush is a no-brainer. And really, you've said this before, Stacey, but it's pass rush, and there is pretty much everything else that is knocked down a peg or two, because the pass rush is such an important part of this offseason for this team. They have to get that addressed. They have to get that fixed. And for the defense, and for Pete Carroll, who wants to be able to just rush four and get pressure with four and play their traditional cover one and cover three, you have to have elite-level pass rushers.
Number two, offensive line. Now, I think that when we say pass rush, I don't mean like the first free agent acquisition should be an edge rusher and the second should be offensive line. We're looking at it as just priorities this team should have. Number one, pass rush, meaning where you spend your capital and your draft capital or your free agent money should be on a pass rush. Maybe it's one or two, maybe three guys.
Two.
Maybe
it's got to be two or three.
Separate guy that you draft. With offensive line, the reason that it ranks so highly here is because you have some key players that are hitting free agency. Right tackle Jermaine Ifedi going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yep.
Same with left guard Mike Iupati going to be an unrestricted free agent. You've got George Fant, who's your extra blocker, going to be an unrestricted free agent. You've got Dwayne Brown, who will be coming back. DJ Fluker, who will be coming back. And Justin Britt coming off of a serious ACL injury. There's also a possibility he becomes a cap casualty. They really like him, so who knows if that happens. But you've got some big questions along the offensive line.
You have to figure out a way to solidify it. And to me, I would love to see them get frontline talent. And through the free agency, I think there's some great options at guard and at tackle. And then also looking at it through the draft in terms of how they can upgrade. So some of these decisions that you're going to end up making in free agency is saying, okay, what do we feel good about in terms of the talent that is in the draft? Can we find some of these needs in the draft, and that can influence some of the areas that we go after in free agency?
And Pete Carroll at his end of season press conference said that he wants some stability along the offensive line, presumably that he'd want to keep as much kind of the same guys there as possible. Now, we know that that might not be possible. It's a very real possibility that a guy like Jermaine Ifedi, former first round pick, I know Seahawks fans haven't always been enamored with him throughout his career, although I think he's improved every year. You have to give him credit for that. But there's a very real chance, and Danny O'Neill said this at 1 p.m. Earlier today, there's a very real chance that Jermaine Ifedi finds a very competitive offer with another team. So for Danny O'Neill, Jermaine Ifedi is the least likely of your players to return.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have some guys kind of waiting in the wings. You've got Phil Haynes and Jamarco Jones. Jamarco Jones, who did a really good job for you. So when Pete Carroll says, yeah, we like the guys we have, we want some stability there, there is a chance that he's also talking about those guys.
Absolutely. But I look at Jamarco Jones and Phil Haynes, I would rather have them compete for one spot. Let them compete for the right guard position between the two of them, and whichever one doesn't win the battle, now he's kind of your, you know, sixth man, so to speak, on the interior in terms of a guy who can rotate between the left guard and right guard if there were any injuries to occur. So that's the way I kind of look at it. Let's keep moving here. Number three, weapons around Russell Wilson. And what we talk about, you know, adding speed, adding playmaking ability, that's got to be key for this offense. Now, everybody can say, look, They were pretty good last year, you know. Don't break it. But the reality is here is that you can always get better, and you should strive to get better and continue to provide Russell Wilson with continued better talent at the tight end position and with your third receiver. I think they can improve in those areas and not astronomically, you know, break the bank and get themselves in bad situations.
And number four is philosophy and scheme. So when we talk about these priorities that we have for the Seahawks, it's not just personnel and player additions. It could also be, you know, do they need to change anything about their philosophy? It could be a run first philosophy on offense. It could be the way that they scheme on defense. Do they need to change anything to get to a Super Bowl, or can they get there with the philosophy and scheme that they currently have? That's an ongoing question that I don't know that I know the answer to yet.
Yeah, it's tough, because I think when you look at it offensively, they've been successful. They've improved every year under Brian Schottenheimer. And I think that that part of it, you have to recognize and you have to give him kudos that he has done a pretty good job since he's been here. And especially, you know, tasked with trying to uphold the philosophy that Pete Carroll has, I think they've continued to evolve. And I think in year three, they probably will do even more so of that and continue to evolve this offense around Russell Wilson without losing the identity of their running game. And defensively, can you get back to Pete Carroll's original philosophy of playing cover one, playing cover three, being aggressive, asserting your will against your opponent, and stop playing with a conservative style? And a talent, acquiring personnel to help fit that scheme is going to be a big part of it, Stacey. And that's something that we will be, you know, keeping an eye on. Are these personnel decisions allowing their defense to get back to that original aggressive style that Pete Carroll wants?
And number five is team speed, which, yeah, pretty important. I think that could go with any position. It could go with scheme. It could really filter into any of them. They need to be quick, be fast. You've seen it work with Kansas City, with many other successful teams. The team speed is something that I think Pete Carroll values, right? Maybe a little bit more
dynamic playmakers, right? Dynamic playmakers. You can make an argument for, all right, the secondary, corner, safety, linebacker, dynamic playmakers that can run sideline to sideline and make an impact on the offensive side of the ball. You know, not just acquiring, you know, guys on offense that are, you know, good, reliable pass catchers, but can they stretch the field? Do they bring something dynamic when the ball hits their hands? You have to find elite playmaking ability, and oftentimes that comes with having elite speed.
Hey, as a reminder, we're also going to have your chance to win Big Payoff at 2:45. We've got your tickets to see Disturbed with special guests Stained and Bad Wolves.
Now, I will tell you, Disturbed was probably played in every single high school weight room during my time.
Absolutely.
With everybody hyped up on NO Explode. All right? That was probably what was
NO
going
Explode?
On here. Everybody was coming in there.
Stacey, do not touch it. Do not go anywhere near it.
I'm ordering
don't do it.
It.
It's, you take it, and the thing is like most high school kids, they don't understand what they're ingesting in their body. I was one of those guys. All I knew was that it just got me jacked before I went and worked out. But the problem was is my face, my hands, my extremities
great.
Were just like tingling. Like
so you're like Stacey at all times.
What's the problem?
It was ridiculous.
Bursting from the seams with excitement.
Yes, listening to Disturbed, getting hyped up in the weight room.
It's called NO Explode?
NO Explode.
Well, that sounds like NO Explode.
You won't find it anywhere. No, don't. No
it's
sense
off the
even
shelves
looking
now?
For it. Yeah.
Well, no,
Stacey,
I'm gonna,
please.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to take a little NO Explode. I'm gonna get myself tickets to go see Disturbed, and I'm going to have a great time. Your chance to win it is coming up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
But wait, it's over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
Just on here, looking up some NO Explode. Looks like it is available. NO Explode. Although all the one-star reviews say that somewhere along the line they changed their formula. So it sounds like I'm not going to get exactly what the original formula, the good stuff. And the reason we're talking about it is because it's my new plan. I'm going to kick off 2020 the right way with way too much of this energy supplement, whatever it is.
Yeah, this is pre-workout supplement.
At a Disturbed concert, because for today's big payoff, it's your chance to win two tickets to see Disturbed with special guests Stained and Bad Wolves on September 12th at the White River Amphitheater. Tickets are available now at Ticketmaster.com. Do I get to pick a number? Caller number three.
Caller number three.
I thought
you were going to enjoy
there
that just in terms of having the power that you just wielded right there.
866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Caller number three right now. Two tickets to see Disturbed with special guest Stain and Bad Wolves. That show's September 12th. So make sure you can go before you call in.
They've got four different flavors of NO Explode.
Yep. I know.
Cherry Limeade, Fruit Punch, Pineapple Vice, and Scorched Cherry.
Wow.
Scorched cherry. Why are these flavors so aggressive?
A text from our text line, Coors Light 710-710. 253 said, I just started NO Explode, and it rocks. Much better than the old recipe.
I don't trust this person because they didn't text in all caps.
The old recipe?
So, actually, did you?
You, sir, I don't want to be around you if you're at the gym.
Another thing kicking off this weekend is the XFL. Curtis and I worked on a couple really cool promotional materials. They were inspired by some of the XFL's new teams. So let's see. Curtis, why don't you go ahead and get us started with one of those?
A venomous villain readies himself in the brush of Tampa Bay. Their strike, lightning quick. Their poison, from within. It contains an abundance of protein-degrading enzymes that produce symptoms such as pain, strong local swelling and necrosis, blood loss from cardiovascular damage, and disruption of the blood clotting system. Death is usually caused by collapse in blood pressure. These poisonous predators are ready for battle.
Absolute fire.
I believe that's who Seattle plays in the home opener, the Tampa Bay Vipers.
Well, the Tampa Bay Vipers are one of the favorites to win the first championship, right?
Well, just make sure you just don't get bitten by the Vipers.
Well, guess what? That's not the only one, because we've got another promotional item for another team. Curtis?
Their den, the field. Their prey, anything they want. These are perennial predators. All primetime action and ready to pounce. The ability to roar comes from an elongated and specially adapted larynx and hyoid apparatus. When air passes through the larynx on the way from the lungs, the cartilage walls of the larynx vibrate, producing a sound that can be heard from more than 8 kilometers away. Ferocious, flexible, fanged. These primetime predators ready to pounce.
Curtis, my favorite thing about yours, outside of it being very scientific, is that it's measured by kilometers.
Yeah. Metric system is worldwide.
I heard there at one point when you mentioned the larynx, you almost lost it.
You almost lost it when you said hyoid bone.
I don't even know how to pronounce that.
Hyoid apparatus.
How has the XFL not hired you two to do all of their promotional?
I have no idea how that hasn't happened.
Guys. Well, this is
voices on point. Very, very educational, as well as just getting everybody hyped. I love it.
Honestly, I think the educational aspect is the most important thing. Unfortunately, we couldn't do one for the Seattle Dragons because allegedly dragons aren't real animals. But I think there's an educational aspect to some of the other mascots in there. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, probably.
I did my part. Are you guys watching the XFL this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to make sure I watch it. It's hard for me because I'm doing we have our RWQB camp that we always do with our offseason program in the morning.
Stacey and I coincidentally have our QB camp at the same time.
Where's yours? Let's say it on three. One, two, three. Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese.
No, it's not where ours is. But I love working with those guys. So I'm going to have it recorded. And when I get home, I can't wait to watch and see what ends up happening. The product that the Seattle Dragons put out there, and with Jim Zorn, you know, calling the plays, I think that part will be really cool. But the reality is this: from what we talked about with Lydia Cruz and from Maura Dooley, that they really haven't practiced. They've done it a couple times with pads and scrimmaged a little bit, but they haven't really been practicing with pads. So the play is probably early on going to be sloppy. Like, there's going to be some nerves rolling. It's going to be a little sloppy, but I think overall, after they get through that initial wave, you know, I'm hoping to see some really good football.
There's still interesting enough aspects to it that I'm really curious to see, whether the NFL adopts any of it. I don't mean that for rule changes, but with some of the fan experience aspects of it, like the idea of listening in to, they wouldn't have NFL fans have access to, like, play calls, but the idea of a live mic'd up aspect to games, I think the NFL would be very curious about. It's essentially what they do for primetime games.
I think the FCC will be very curious about it,
too. The FCC would love
Oh, really?
That.
Oh, we'll have a listening ear to that.
Yeah.
I think coaches would roll over in their grave before they allowed any of that access to be, you know, openly projected on the broadcast. Not a chance.
Well, you never know.
You can always dream, though, right?
Yeah. You know, have you ever thought about having the kids at quarterback camp you're at maybe compete
against
Russell
Wilson's
the
kids? Quarterback
right,
camp.
Right, right, right. Have you ever thought about, you know, you and Russ having your quarterbacks compete against mine and Curtis's?
Yeah, sure. You can bring them down anytime you want.
We have a When? Like, because we need some time to get some quarterbacks.
Yeah.
This Saturday, 9 to 11.
More than enough time.
Come on down.
If you're interested in being in our quarterback camp, let us know. Otherwise, I'm also looking forward to watching the XFL. I'm very curious. More Dooley sideline reporter. Lydia Cruz going to have a follow-up edition of Dragons Insider on Wednesday, 710 ESPN Seattle at 7 p.m.
Jim Zorn awesome. Show on Monday.
Yeah. Is that on Clayton during Clayton?
It is, 11 a.m.
All right, let's
I'm
go.
I'm excited. Let's see what happens. Thanks for tuning in. This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey.